Ansel Packer wakes on his execution day with a manic smile, examining his thumbprint in the jaundiced prison light. With 12 hours remaining, he clings desperately to hope through a cryptic note from prison guard Shauna, "I did it." The media branded him the girly killer, a label he despises not just for its reductive simplicity, but for how it diminishes the complexity of his crimes into tabloid sensationalism. Though never claiming innocence, he resents how his story has been distorted, how only his weakest moments expanded to define him entirely. As his final hours tick away, Ansel obsessively returns to his philosophical theory, an elaborate metaphysical framework justifying his actions through complex reasoning about alternate realities. When sharing his writings with the stone-faced warden, he argues passionately that infinite alternate universes exist, where our darkest impulses remained merely theoretical. The warden punctures this carefully constructed intellectual facade with devastating precision, asking simply, where would those girls be now in a world where Ansel hadn't killed them? With just minutes remaining, Ansel's philosophical posturing completely disintegrates, replaced by primal terror. When asked for last words, he abandons all pretense of intellectual superiority, begging pathetically, "I promise I'll be better. Give me one more chance." In his final moments of consciousness, he experiences a brief but profound clarity, seeing with terrible lucidity how the world will continue turning without him, indifferent to his theories, his justifications, and ultimately his existence. While Ansel's countdown structures the novel, the women's stories form its emotional core. Hazel, Jenny's twin sister, first notices something unsettling about Ansel, his lingering eye contact and delayed laughter. When she discovers him digging in their yard at 4:16 a.m. during Christmas, his explanation about burying lights feels rehearsed. Later, when their eyes meet during an intimate moment with Jenny, Hazel glimpses something savage in him, like the damp, infested soil beneath an overturned rock. Saffron Singh meets Ansel in a childhood group home. After finding him arranging dead animals by a creek, 12-year-old Safi becomes his target when he leaves a decomposing fox on her bed. This trauma shapes her future as a detective determined to bring him to justice. Years later, as Captain Singh, she builds a case against him, securing his confession by triggering memories of their shared past. Lavender, Ansel's mother, abandons her children in 1973, feeling both guilt and relief as she wades into San Diego's waters. Decades later, she meets her granddaughter Blue, finding in her both reflection and redemption. Ansel's psychological deterioration stems from childhood trauma, mental health issues, and deliberate choices. He suffers from severe auditory hallucinations and infant's cries that begin in adolescence and persist throughout his life. His first violent episode at 17 follows a humiliating social interaction, temporarily silencing the hallucinations and establishing a destructive pattern. The relief lasts just 3 weeks before the disturbances return, leading to a second incident involving Angela, a restaurant worker he observes obsessively. His third incident becomes pivotal when he recognizes Sarah from his childhood group home. This encounter forces him to confront his history of institutional care and abandonment, deepening his crisis rather than providing relief. Afterward, Ansel experiences such profound distress that he seeks emergency medical help, but ultimately withdraws from treatment, revealing how he recognizes his condition yet actively resists intervention and change. The Blue House restaurant symbolizes hope throughout the narrative. For Ansel, it represents a chance to connect with his biological family, his brother Ellis, sister-in-law Rachel, and niece Blue. The weathered blue building, needing renovation, mirrors Ansel's attempt at rebuilding his life. When 16-year-old Blue first meets Ansel, the phantom crying of Baby Packer that has haunted him for years finally ceases, as if saying, "Finally, you found me." The Blue House also becomes the stage for potential tragedy. Its warm kitchen and family dinners represent everything Ansel never had. Safi intervenes by warning Rachel and Blue about Ansel's violent past, shattering Blue's innocent vision of finding a long-lost uncle. Years later, Blue makes the extraordinary decision to witness Ansel's execution, emerging from profound empathy, recognizing that bad people feel pain too, while remaining aware of his crimes. Through Blue's compassion, we see how acknowledging someone's humanity doesn't require forgetting their actions. The novel hauntingly imagines the unlived futures of Ansel's victims. Izzy Sanchez would have been on her grandfather's sailboat, eating a tangerine as pelicans dive nearby. Angela Meyer would have made Italy her second home, opening a cooking school in Florence after traveling to 27 countries. Leela's unborn daughter, Grace, would have grown from an animal-loving child into the Columbus Zoo's director. Jenny would have delivered 6,552 babies as a midwife, welcoming each with the same gentle words, "Welcome to the world, little one." These imagined futures function as both elegy and indictment, a powerful reminder of all that was stolen. They challenge true crime's tendency to reduce victims to footnotes in a killer's narrative. By giving these women fully realized lives beyond their deaths, the novel restores their humanity and forces us to confront the full weight of their loss. On the night of Ansel's execution, Safi retreats to the empty police station, focusing on the Jackson case, 14-year-old Tanisha, missing for 6 days. Safi believes fiercely that Tanisha lives, that not every girl must become a girl. This determination to prevent future tragedies becomes her salvation, extracting meaning from senseless loss. For Hazel, the execution brings transformation. As Ansel is revealed strapped to the gurney, she feels Jenny's overwhelming presence in her lungs, her clenched fist, her reflection. Her sister's absence transforms into an awareness of eternal presence. This is sisterhood's miracle. Though death remains cruel, Jenny exists in Hazel's every breath, memory, and act of survival. Lavender finds healing at the Sequoia Commune, where, at 63, she discovers peace among ancient trees. Though rejecting happiness as purely achievable, she finds something more sustainable in the steady rhythm of unfolding days. This story's power lies not in exploring a killer's mind, but in portraying women who survive in his wake. Our fixation on murderers unintentionally silences victims, elevating killers to dark celebrities while reducing victims to footnotes. The novel's wisdom emerges when Ansel asks Safi if she wonders about different choices in another universe. "I wonder all the time, but there's only this world, Ansel, just this one." This acceptance of reality, with all its imperfections and moments of grace, becomes the enduring message. In our killer-obsessed culture, perhaps our greatest resistance is shifting attention to those who rebuild after devastation. Their stories remind us that while we cannot change the past, we can choose how we move forward. Humanity's true measure isn't found in understanding monsters, but in witnessing ordinary people finding extraordinary strength to continue living after unimaginable pain.